Tonight on The Daily Debrief, an arrest in the disappearance of a Colorado fiancé. We will have live analysis. Plus, Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg undergoes surgery and calls for a new legal investigation into former New York Governor Eliot Spitzer. Also, calls for armed teachers with federal help backing them up. That's tonight on The Daily Debrief for Friday, December 21st.
And good evening, everybody. Welcome to The Daily Debrief. I'm Aaron Keller, along with Rachel Stockman. An arrest tonight in the case of a missing Colorado mother is capturing national headlines tonight. Kelsey Barrett vanished on Thanksgiving Day. Now her fiancé, Patrick Frazee, is charged with murder, even though authorities don't have a body and don't have a clue where Kelsey Barrett is. Bottom line, authorities say they do not believe Barrett is alive. Frazee has been booked on charges of first-degree murder and solicitation for first-degree murder, but official charges may be days off. The couple shared a one-year-old daughter. Larry Posner is a criminal defense attorney in Colorado. He joins us live tonight on The Daily Debrief. Larry, good evening.
This is a very sad day. I have no idea what led the police to him and what evidence they have, but this is just terrible.
It certainly is. So we have murder and we have solicitation. We're talking about solicitation here, so that's a specific crime. What do prosecutors need to prove here in order to get solicitation? They must have something.
Yeah, in order to have a solicitation case, ordinarily the prosecutors have a suspect that they believe committed the crime. And sometimes they actually have a confession from that suspect. But how they would have developed that and what evidence they have is completely in the dark.
It's a tight-lipped case. We don't have a criminal affidavit that is sealed. We don't know exactly what they're doing with the solicitation charge here, but they have it, so that suggests they must have something. We just don't know yet.
Yeah, and without knowing what they have, we cannot yet judge the quality of the case. It is true that in these cases, the investigation begins with somebody close to the alleged victim, but we've gone down false leads before. So, you know, what physical evidence do they have? What scientific evidence? What eyewitnesses? We don't know.
Authorities have been seizing items from the home where these folks lived. They've been seen removing bags, presumably of evidence. They even brought a ladder into the home. So something is going on. They must have warrants. It takes time for those to become unsealed, though, if I'm understanding things properly.
Absolutely. They would need search warrants or consent. And so that means there's probably an affidavit that laid out for a judge why it's reasonable to search the house. But again, since that's sealed, we have no insight.
We don't. The missing woman's phone, we know, has been tracked to Idaho, where apparently she has family. That might be a clue. How did it get there? We also know she was a flight instructor, as I understand it. So could she have taken off? Could she have taken the phone all that way to Idaho from Colorado? Or is this just something that a killer would want people to think and would somehow set it up? I don't know, maybe mail the phone.
Well, but either we just can't tell. It's very strange that we would have the phone pinging 600 miles away. How did it get there? Did another person carry it? Or, you know, is there a third person who is the culprit and that person is unrelated to the defendant?
In a lot of states, prosecutors face accusations that they are too loose-lipped, that they give away too much about a defendant before there's even been an arraignment. We have this case, we have Chris Watts in Colorado, where the details were kept under wraps. You're a defense attorney. Do you think this is the ethical way to go about business?
Yes. Criminal investigations should not be public records. I know that that we have a free press, and you're entitled to information, but that doesn't mean we're entitled to it now. And in fact, if this person is innocent, they can create a real problem by releasing information, which later makes it hard to find the real suspect, the real killer, and convict them.
Understood completely. Larry Posner, criminal defense attorney in Colorado, we appreciate you joining us tonight and taking a few moments off of your vacation. I understand you are far, far away at this moment.
I'm happily in Hawaii.
Okay, well, we appreciate you taking a break out of the vacation to join us on The Daily Debrief. Thanks again. The parents of an Ohio man who died after emerging from a North Korean prison are now suing. Otto Warmbier died in 2017 after he came home in a coma. North Korea said he stole a propaganda poster, and they sentenced him to a 15-year sentence. U.S. officials believe he was tortured in a labor camp, but North Korea says he had botulism. His parents are seeking a $1 billion settlement from North Korea for violating international law. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg underwent surgery today for two malignant nodules on her left lung. Ginsburg fell and fractured her ribs last month. Tests performed after the fall revealed the presence of those nodules. Ginsburg is expected to stay in the hospital for a couple of days to recover. Scans revealed that nothing had spread. No further treatment is planned. Acting Attorney General Matthew Whitaker has reportedly sidestepped ethics advice concerning the investigation led by Special Counsel Robert Mueller. Whitaker notified Congress last week that he did not intend to recuse himself from decision-making authority regarding the actions of the Special Counsel's office. Unnamed officials in the Justice Department say ethics advisors initially told Whitaker to steer clear of Mueller's office to avoid the appearance of a conflict, but four other advisors told him to forget that initial advice. That's according to the Washington Post and others. I'm here with Law and Crime President Rachel Stockman to break down this case. Rachel, a lot of questions about what's going on with ethics here. You know, should he take the advice? Is it just cautionary advice? Should it be binding advice? Should he sidestep it? What's your analysis?
Well, so they didn't find an actual conflict of interest. When ethics officials were looking at it and initially told him that he should recuse himself, it was the appearance of conflict, such that it was probably a close call, but he should do it anyway. His reasoning for not doing it is he didn't want to be the first one to recuse himself for an issue like this. I don't know if that's a particularly good excuse, but bottom line here is this really doesn't smell right to the American public.
It's one of those things where people tend not to like it, but a lot of the opinions follow political ideology here.
Absolutely.
As well. You know, people who support President Trump support his decision to appoint this guy. They want to put a lid on this investigation. Of course, we know the president's calling it a witch hunt. You know, so the appearance of a conflict is a big difference legally from an actual conflict.
And that's we're going to have these same issues with this new attorney general that's going to be coming in bar as well.
So. Yeah, I mean, so how far does it go? I mean, how far do we play out the ethical chain of possible issues here?
Exactly. But again, I think you're absolutely right. It depends on what political spectrum you're on whether, you know, what side of this issue you take. But I think
it could affect the big investigation that's going on right now. I mean, people are going to jail because of what Mueller's office found.
Absolutely. And what we don't know right now is what other indictments that could be sitting on his desk, or potential, I should say, indictments are sitting on his desk, and what he's going to do about it if he is in that situation.
Rachel Stockman, we'll check in with you again at the end of the broadcast. A bombshell report is out about former New York governor and former state attorney general Elliot Spitzer. The New York Post quotes a former mistress of the former governor as saying he would sneak her into his Manhattan residence in a suitcase. The attorney for the mistress is pushing for an investigation into Spitzer by federal prosecutors. Spitzer resigned as governor in 2008 after he was implicated in a prostitution scandal. A town justice in New York State have resigned after accusations that he's basically just too old school. Justice Bruce Skolton of the town of Harmony, way out in western New York State, resigned effective at the end of this month after an ethics complaint. The State Commission on Judicial Conduct says he failed to check his official email account for more than 3 years. They say he also failed to adopt necessary software, failed to report more than 2,600 cases to the State Department of Motor Vehicles, and failed to deposit court money into the bank. Skolton is prohibited from seeking or accepting any other appointment to the bench from here on out. A 78-year-old Florida man is accused of mailing death threats to the mother of the survivor of the Parkland School massacre in Florida. Warren Stanley Bond was scheduled to appear in court today after prosecutors accused him of mailing a threatening communication to the mother of David Hogg. The letter complained that Hogg was working against the NRA. Bond is said to have admitted to sending the letter. He also said he recently resigned his own NRA membership. If convicted, he could face 5 years in prison. An exchange student at a Pennsylvania university is in trouble with the law after allegedly poisoning his roommate and the case has racial undertones. Authorities say 22-year-old Yu Kei Yang, a chemistry student from China, put the toxic metal, thallium, in his black roommate's food, water, and mouthwash over the course of several months. The poisoning caused a, quote, lasting impact on the roommate's health, though the roommate did graduate. Authorities say Yang previously intimidated his roommate with racist graffiti. Yang now faces charges of attempted homicide, aggravated assault, simple assault, and reckless endangerment. New details tonight in the case of Molly Tibbetts, the Iowa woman whose disappearance and death captured national attention. Newly unsealed search warrants reveal that four men were the subjects of police interest during the weeks leading up to the discovery of Tibbetts' body. The men included a farmer with a history of stalking women, an acquaintance who erased his cell phone data, a man who ditched his car near Brooklyn, Iowa, and a neighbor seen washing his car hours before Tibbetts was last seen. The Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation ruled the four men out as their suspects as the investigation unfolded. Christian Rivera, the man you see there, eventually turned himself into police and led them to Tibbetts' body. A judge has ruled that a celebrity lawsuit involving some of the Kardashians, Blac Chyna, and Kris and Kylie Jenner will go before a Los Angeles jury. The civil case involves accusations that Jenner and Kim and Khloe Kardashian unlawfully plotted to kill season two of the show Rob and Chyna. Blac Chyna suffered, quote, substantial financial losses, the suit claims. A judge in the case is also forcing the E! Network to turn over documents related to the case, despite a claim by the network that the documents contained trade secrets. Celebrity attorney Lisa Bloom, who represents Blac Chyna, discussed the case on the Law and Crime Network.
Ultimately, we got what we wanted, which is the requirement that the other side and some third parties like the network and the production company turn over a lot of documents to us. They had asked that we pay like $100,000 for the documents, which was ridiculous. We resisted that. Of course, we don't have to pay anything. The judge ruled they just have to give us those documents for free, just like every other litigant here in California. And we got a trial date, which is in February of 2020 for this case. This is an important case to us. We have represented Blac Chyna for about a year and a half, ever since she was the victim of a very vicious revenge porn rant on social media from her ex, Rob Kardashian. And when we looked into it, we discovered that the Kardashian-Jenner family had plotted to kill her successful show, Rob and Chyna. And, you know, it's just as illegal for them to do it as it is for anybody else. If you know somebody has a contract and they have particular rights under that contract, for example, for a second season of a show, you can't unlawfully interfere with that contract. And if you do, you can be hauled into court and have to pay civil damages for doing that. And that's what the case is all about.
A hearing this week in the so-called Pike County Massacre in Ohio. Eight members of the Roden family were killed on April 22, 2016. Authorities believe the execution-style killings occurred after months of meticulous planning. According to court documents, the state believes the motive was a child custody battle. Victim Hannah Roden was the mother of a child fathered by one of the suspects. Four members of the Wagner family are each charged with eight counts of aggravated murder and other crimes. All could face the death penalty if convicted. Authorities found very little forensic evidence at the scenes of the crimes, but prosecutors say other evidence links the four suspects to the deaths. The other evidence includes cell phone data, evidence that the suspects monitored the victims online and through cameras. The suspects are also accused of making a silencer to conceal the shootings. Suspect Edward Jake Wagner was in court this week. His child with one of the victims is said to be the center of this dispute. And his attorneys argued five motions. Here first, though, the defendant speaks.
Mr. Wagner, we usually like to ask, have you had an opportunity that you feel a sufficient opportunity as you go along to discuss your case with your attorneys here?
Yes, sir.
And are you satisfied with the effort that they're making on your behalf and the work that they're doing on your behalf?
Yes, sir.
Yesterday's hearing included a request that the judge prevent the attorneys representing the four primary defendants from contacting the other defendants directly. It also included a request that the defendant only appear in court in civilian clothes. The prosecutor noted that was already occurring. Jury selection continuing in a case we're planning to cover on the Law and Crime Network. Jeremiah Monell of New Jersey is accused of stabbing his wife to death and leading police on a manhunt after the stabbing. Victim Tara O'Shea Watson died in December 2016. Opening statements are scheduled for January 3rd, just after the holidays. If convicted, Jeremiah Monell faces life without parole. He did reject a 30-year plea deal. As the holidays are a time for memories, it's natural to look back on memorable moments from the previous year. For some of the most volatile incidents caught on camera in our nation courts, here is Anthony Velez.
I'm Anthony Velez for Law and Crime, and here are your top five caught on court camera moments of 2018. Number five.
God! God! God!
A suspect in a double murder was denied bond in a Florida courtroom after screaming from a wheelchair during his bond hearing. 19-year-old Damon Kemp is accused of the fatal shooting of 19-year-old Trey Ingraham and 19-year-old Jordan Payton at their home in Daytona Beach. Kemp, who was reportedly staying with the two victims at their home, is seen being disruptive during his bond hearing.
God! God! God!
I've reviewed your arrest warrant to determine whether there's probable cause for your arrest.
That?
Kemp now faces two counts of second-degree murder. Number four. A crazy melee unfolded in a Florida courtroom after a guilty verdict was read in a murder trial. Video shows the eruption of violence after the verdict was delivered in a murder trial with four defendants. Three of the co-defendants can be seen brawling with their own defense attorneys and court bailiffs. Once order was restored to the court, all four defendants were sentenced to life in prison. The four men were convicted in the shooting death of 28-year-old Courtney London in 2016. Number three. A man in Oregon was caught on camera trying to grab an officer's service weapon during his trial in a Lincoln County courtroom. 27-year-old Scott Patrick Lemon can be seen quickly standing up and unsuccessfully lunging for the gun of a Newport police officer before being tackled to the ground by another officer. Lemon was convicted for robbing two guests at a beachfront condo in Newport with a fake gun. Number two. A judge in Washington State played the role of court officer and chased down two handcuffed inmates who made a run for sweet freedom in his courtroom. The inmates, 22-year-old Tanner Jacobson and 28-year-old Cody Howard, saw an opportunity to escape and went for it. That's when Judge R.W. Buzzard surprised everyone and leapt into action, chasing down the fleeing inmates. Buzzard was able to apprehend Howard before he exited the building. Jacobson was caught by officers a few blocks away. Here's the number one caught on court camera moment.
We, the jury, find the defendant Daniel Villegas not guilty of...
Daniel Villegas was found not guilty of murder, ending a 25-year saga that included three trials and appeals. Villegas faced capital murder charges for the 1993 fatal shooting of two teens in El Paso and served 18 years in prison prior to his acquittal. Villegas, who was 16 at the time of the killings, faced his first trial in 1994, which ended in a mistrial, but was convicted during a second trial a year later, receiving a life sentence. The bittersweet moment of his acquittal was caught on court camera.
We, the jury, find the defendant Daniel Villegas not guilty of...
That was the number one caught on court camera moment. I'm Anthony Velez for Law and Crime.
And still ahead tonight here on the Daily Debrief, a new plan by the Secretary of Education to put guns in the hands of teachers. Find out who might pay for it. Plus, chaos at the airport. Find out what led to this mess after the break on the Daily Debrief. And welcome back, folks. A report from the U.S. Department of Education suggests that teachers should be armed with weapons. Education Secretary Betsy DeVos authored the report, which encourages school districts to consider arming teachers. Districts would also be emboldened to use federal funds to train school staff to use firearms. The report does not explicitly state that all teachers should be armed, but it does applaud states in which teachers are currently allowed to carry guns. Another report this week from the Illinois Attorney General reveals shocking numbers about priest sex abuse cases across her state. That report by AG Lisa Madigan says that more than 690 priests have been accused of sexual abuse against children. It also says that the Catholic Church leadership has only publicly identified 185 of the offending clergy members who have, credible allegations against him. The report also slams Illinois dioceses, saying they have lost sight of a key tenet of policies laid out by the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. Some of the cases cited in the report go back decades. And now for a recap of criminal incidents making headlines, here is Anthony Velez.
Here are today's top crime stories trending on LawAndCrime.com and across the country. A porn star is under arrest after reportedly plotting to kill a victim in a murder-for-hire plot. 31-year-old Katrina Danforth, who goes by Lynn Pleasant in the adult film industry, was arrested at Spokane International Airport for allegedly conspiring to have an unidentified person in Idaho murdered. The person was not harmed in the incident, and Danforth now faces 5 counts of using interstate commerce in the commission of murder for hire. A pair of escaped inmates in Kentucky were apprehended after leading police on a high-speed chase. 32-year-old Brandon Long and 30-year-old Paul Napier, both convicted on burglary charges, escaped the Lewis County Detention Center and were on the lam for several hours before being spotted in a stolen car with a woman by law enforcement officers. After a high-speed chase through several counties, officers were able to apprehend the pair of escapees and the woman, and they now face new charges.
Oh, yes, it was called fuck. It was called fuck. It's all called fuck.
An airline passenger at an airport in Tennessee reportedly caused thousands of dollars of damage after becoming enraged over a $20 baggage fee. The suspect, Tamiko Warner, is seen on video flipping out for nearly 5 minutes before she is arrested.
I don't care about going to jail, man. Whatever.
I don't know.
It's worth it.
Warner now faces charges of disorderly conduct and vandalism. Those were today's top crime stories. I'm Anthony Velez for the Daily Debrief.
Back one last time with Law and Crime President Rachel Stockman now. So, Rachel, what's all the dust in the air there? I mean, how does one damage $1,000 worth of airport equipment over a $20 baggage fee?
That was crazy. But you know what? I'm not totally surprised. Going to the... Seriously.
You thought of this, apparently.
I've thought of doing this. Going to the airport these days and how you're treated by those TSA agents, how you're treated like you're cattle when you get on a plane, you know, and when you're waiting in the lines to check in, Listen, this woman took it way too far, but I can certainly understand some of her frustration.
I express some sympathy, or I should say a sense it out of you. But look, I mean, she's going to get stuck with the bill for the damage she caused. I mean, there's going to be some kind of civil action for sure.
Civil,
if not restitution, criminal.
Some criminal penalties as well, so...
I sense that you might not be in the mood to fly anywhere over the next couple of days.
Well, I'm going tomorrow. I'm flying tomorrow. So if you hear of any incidences, you might know what it is.
I hope that you're not a story in the debrief on after the holiday, but have a good one.
You too. Merry Christmas.
And thank you very much. And, of course, that's all we have for today on the debrief. Live trial coverage begins the day after Christmas at 9 o'clock Eastern here on the Law and Crime Network. For those of you celebrating, have a very Merry Christmas. We'll see you back here right after then. Have a good one.